WGXE is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXE's on-air dialogue, call 518-828-0290 or email info@wgxe.org.
Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXE. I'm Victor Mandolia, and my co-host, my new permanent co-host, which I'm so thrilled about, is Deborah Gilbert. Deborah's here.
Hi. Nice to be here.
And our guest for the full hour is going to be is Supervisor William Hughes Jr.
Hello.
Supervisor Hughes represents the 4th Ward in the City of Hudson to the Board of Supervisors. So thanks for joining me and joining us. I guess, Bill, you're the most often guest here on At Issue. So you hold the record so far, I think.
It's always fun.
So I guess we could sort of start off. We have a lot of stuff to cover, but the snowstorm was the big story this week. And I was wondering what you thought about the response. And
as far as the city or county?
City.
Well, okay. I've heard some complaints too. And what I think is people have to understand the mayor and his administration is working with a budget. And the storm really came through on a Saturday, and that means double time and a half for employees. And so I think the decision probably was made, and I can't speak for the mayor, but I'm thinking in my mind, because this is how I would have thought, the decision was made to save money on the taxpayers and then to come in probably midnight on Monday and start then. So they probably ended up getting a 10 to 12 hour late start on the storm of clearing the snow, which in part probably caused some of the problems. And I think that also having being able to quickly call a snow emergency probably would have alleviated some of that. But I think, you know, it's growing pains. So when you get a snowstorm, I watched Albany too. They were having some of the same kind of issues until Mayor Jennings came on and eventually issued a snowstorm emergency. So, you know, dealing with snow, I know people get frustrated, but you have to be patient. We can come out here if they want and do a full blitz and clean these streets up and do it, you know, in expeditious type fashion, what it's going to cost.
But do you think that the system is working? It seems like, you know, I think one of the biggest complaints is that there's nowhere to move a car to once they say, you know, no parking on the odd side, that if the even side hasn't been cleared yet, there's nowhere to put the cars. And
well,
so
I get that. But and I was just talking to a couple of the aldermen yesterday. I said, so if I do one side parking, we are already compressed and short of parking. So where exactly are these cars going to park when you say do one-side parking?
So don't you think, though, it might be better to just continue the normal alternate side of the street parking? I think in the past the issue has been, we call a snow emergency and you have to move the car in the morning because they want to plow as soon as the snow stops. But that clearly is not happening. So wouldn't it be better just to wait until midnight when the side is clear and then plow that side as normal?
That would have worked. And that's why I said there's growing pains with this. If you look at what happened is if we called these guys in midnight Monday, and I'm not sure what time they were called in, but just take for example, you called them in midnight Monday just to plow the streets. You don't have enough time or enough manpower capacity to remove the snow on one side. So when businesses opened on Monday, particularly on Warren Street, when they opened on Monday, you had snow on both sides, cars on both sides. It was basically almost transformed Warren Street into a one-lane highway.
Right.
And that was part of the problem. And I think we could think of a better strategy in dealing with that under the different circumstances. Or, like I said, or again, call the guys in earlier and you know, you have to take the hit on the overtime. These are executive decisions that had to be made at that level. And I certainly don't want to, you know, act as though I'm going to make those decisions because I'm not sitting in the mayor's seat.
No, of course not.
But it's you know, it's tough. And people...
But you're a representative of the city, so right. I mean, certainly we all care about how things work here.
Right. Maybe the city should think about tolerating double parking the way they do in New York City during the time that the parking lane is supposed to be plowed.
The only thing is that Hudson streets are so much smaller than New York streets.
It still doesn't address the issue of Warren Street, which is the business district, and trying to get that clear and getting deliveries. And most people, in particular, try to get deliveries first thing in the beginning of the week, which would have been Monday, which... You know, kind of played into this whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is difficult dealing. Each storm comes with its own problems. I do think though, more attention could have been paid to the roads. Maybe down the line there could be some. I know the chairman of the county talked about collaboration between the city and towns as far as snow removal. So maybe those kinds of talks will take place.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I hope that we look at is the length of time that you're prohibited from parking on a certain site. And if a site has been plowed or the site has been removed, we should be able to move there as quickly as possible and not have to wait out another 10 hours or something because the regulations say that. It was anyway, it was a mess.
It was. I think had this storm happened on Monday or a day during the week, I think there would have been a lot better job. I think the decision was made, at least that's what it appears on its face, to not pay the double time or double time and a half, mm-hmm. and to call the guys in after that period had passed.
It was particularly hard on the retailers, I gather.
Yeah. At a critical time for them, of course.
Yeah.
So, one of the biggest issues that people have been talking about is... And have been in the press is the airport expansion, and I was wondering if maybe you could tell us a little bit about where things stand with that and what your feelings are about the airport expansion.
Sure, I looking at the airport expansion, it was always on, I think, all the supervisors' radar, and you know, you have to, if you look at what we've been doing as supervisors over the year, we've been dealing with the courthouse expansion, dealing with Pine Haven, and also the airport. So we really were treating, at least in my mind, treating the three projects as the same. A lot of information coming at you about building and expansion and why you need to do these things. It really didn't come as a central focus until the eminent domain proceedings came forward to us. And then, you know, a spotlight was shown.
And just for those who aren't familiar, the reason that eminent domain... Which is where the government takes a property, they have to, of course, pay fair market value for it. But the eminent domain came into being because the county made an offer for the property and it was rejected by the consortium of owners that own the property.
Correct. And so with that happening, you know, there are a few supervisors that was like, okay, whoa, so. What really are the exact particulars of this? And so we were trying to get answers from Kim Flood, who's the director of, you know, planning and tourism and also of CEDC.
Which is the Columbia Economic Development Commission. Council.
Or council, one of those two.
All right.
But so, you know, once we really took a look at that, and, you know, there were some people in the community, citizens in the community, who were already doing a lot of work and investigation on this and brought that material forward. And then, you know, we thought as supervisors, we probably better take a better look at this and really get a real understanding of what it meant. Because truthfully, in the beginning, we thought that this mandate came from FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, to expand the runway. And so we just took it as, you know, that was to be done. And we will buy the property and do what it need to be done, especially based on the fact that we were going to get 90% reimbursement or 95% reimbursement.
So in your opinion, though, now, is that true?
The reimbursement, I believe...
No, not the reimbursement. That the FAA had ordered that it be extended.
I think the FAA is still saying that if we want to conduct business there and have it safe, we still need to expand the runway.
Mm-hmm.
In the committee, airport committee meeting last week, which I attended, Art Basson said that No one has seen a letter from the FAA saying this. And he said there are different regulations, FAA regulations, for smaller airports and for larger airports with runways beyond a certain length. And Columbia County's is a smaller one. And, you know, maybe there's a 10-year, this is part of a 10-year process, and we're not near the end of that yet. So there's no need, he said, to act immediately. That's his opinion, but, you know, there's been no paperwork shown to anybody.
Right, but the FAA themselves were there along with the airport committee. And, you know, I think at that time they were talking about it. And in that discussion, still alluded to the fact that if you want to have a safe runway there, you needed to expand the runway. At least that is to my understanding. Now, that still begs the question, you know, it gets into all the in-depth information that Supervisor Bassin is bringing forward. Do we need to expand the runway? Can we take jets, you know, can jets take off of there, you know, not fully fueled? What would it mean to the county as far as the economic development? And if we don't expand the runway and larger jets aren't allowed to come here? So I think we're on the right path now. I think when Chairman Grattan formed this committee and Supervising Bassett came the chair of the airport committee, we're on the right path to really getting the questions answered that have been asked by the citizens of Columbia County.
It seems like some supervisors were interested in eliminating the airport committee. Is the airport committee going forward?
How did it get formed in the first place? It's a recent development, right?
How the committee got formed?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that's easy. The committee got formed. There were so many questions coming forward and so many things going unanswered, and especially after the initial, I don't know what we want to call that initial meeting, public information meeting or whatever. I think it was a poor presentation on the county's part, the first meeting, as far as giving the citizens of Columbia County answers on the airport. And I actually, as a supervisor, was embarrassed by that particular meeting.
Was that before the Bassin resolution or after?
Was that after? I'm not sure. It was the one where Kim Flood came and was going to answer the questions of the public and
kept saying, I don't know.
Right. That whole meeting, I think, was fairly embarrassing. One, it was rushed. We didn't have, I think if we were going to do something like that, we should have had FAA there. We should have had people there that could have really given you in-depth answers. We probably should have had FAA, Rich Moore, all the people, instead of bringing them in on individually, we should have had them there as a collective group.
Right.
That didn't happen, and thus the chairman sat back and took a real look at that and said, you know what, we better form a committee and get the answers to these questions that the people of Columbia County deserve. And that's what he did, and he agreed to put Supervisor Bass in his chair, understanding that he probably at the time was the one taking the most interest on the airport issue.
Mm-hmm. So it seemed to be a real embarrassment to Ken Flood after that meeting because of the revelations that Sam Pratt brought out that Flood had signed off on a grant application for the expansion of the airport when he kept saying that he didn't know if there was a plan to expand the airport. What do you think about that? And do you think that Ken Flood is doing the correct job in his role there?
Well. Look, I think in dealing with all grant applications, it wasn't like the grant application was a total secret to the supervisors, because he did bring it to the Economic Development Committee. I had gotten off of that committee, so I wasn't aware of that grant application, but other supervisors were. And look, he built the application up, and he really put, you know, things in the application to probably make it stronger. Our focus has been, because I went out and did a tour of it, was expanding our water sewer capacity out there. And I think to try to do this without it costing the taxpayers of Columbia County a lot of money is we were going to try to get, you know, mix it in with really a fluffed up grant application, as you will.
I'd like to read some language from that grant application,
sure.
which I was able to reach through sampratt.com.
I read it too, but go ahead.
But just a couple short things. One was the purpose was to develop 70 acres of county-owned land for high-tech aviation businesses and develop the area as a cornerstone of the Southern Capital Region.
Mm-hmm.
And he also says the Upper Hudson, to relieve traffic, to absorb corporate and smaller freight aircraft traffic congesting other regional airports.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how this might alarm some property owners who maybe left New York City to get a nice place in the country where they could escape, and now they're finding right on their doorstep is a planned industrial tract.
Do you think that the ultimate plan is to increase traffic at the airport and have it be a much busier airport than it is right now?
Well, look, let's be honest. If you're a business owner or you know, you're running a business, the business is to be profitable. And the way to be profitable is to increase your revenues. And how do you do that? Increase business.
Right, but this is a county airport. It's not a private enterprise.
Well, you have a private business running out of the county airport. And so, you know, their business is dealing with aviation and businesses that are tied to the aviation. So if you're going to increase their revenues and bring more jobs here and that thing, then yes, you would have to expand what you currently have. With that being said, though, is if we could expand, if they right now could expand on smaller planes, say you were going to get an increase on smaller planes and smaller jets and what have you, then that begs the question is, would we not want that? So, you know, when I look at it, and I'm right now as myself taking a real hard look at this and trying to see where the middle is here. Mm-hmm. And that's why I want the airport committee to go through, do its job. I want FAA to come up here, give an explanation of what it is they are exactly asking for,
mm-hmm.
and get all the facts out there so we as supervisors can ask ourselves some hard questions as, do we want increased traffic at the airport and to what level? What will that mean for Columbia County? Is it going to mean jobs, extra revenue, sales tax? I mean, all these things.
More truck traffic.
Could mean more truck traffic. Look at all those things that could, you know, be a benefit and also a negative to Clement County and see what we can accept and what we can't accept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important, though, that we see Supervisor Benvenuto, who's the newly elected supervisor in Ghent, so that Ghent will have a voice in this decision, because I think Ghent is one of the towns that is nearest the airport.
I mean, is the airport's in Ghent, right?
I believe so.
Yes.
And yep. Just for listeners who aren't aware, the reason that it's so important to seat the newly elected supervisor there is because the previous supervisor has passed away, and there's no
right.
and at the moment there's no representative from the town most affected by this by the airport.
The airport. And so once we do that, I think we can get on it with the business at hand. And that's why I think that the airport committee isn't going anywhere. The chairman realized that, you know, there's frustration amongst the supervisors as far as we've done projects like this before, and they tend to go on for years and years and years. And the airport has been going on for years and years and years.
Mm.
And some of them are saying, look, you know, let's be done with this already. Let's make a decision. But that wouldn't be the smart thing to do. We need to get all the information out there. We need to answer people's questions. And we need to answer some questions ourselves.
I mean, the county is also in the midst of two major capital projects, mm-hmm. at Pine Haven Nursing Home and the Columbia County Courthouse. So it does seem a lot to bite off right now.
We're looking at, you know, with all these projects, you know, close to $100 million. We the courthouse, we believe, will be done somewhere in around February, and we will have, you know,
this coming February,
huh. And we will have our court staff in there after it's all cleaned up and dusted and everything, probably March, and in spring we will have some sort of ceremony. At least that's coming from the chairman, so I'm repeating what I heard from the chairman.
Mm-hmm.
So we're close to the end of that project, and we're going to really start focusing in and honing in on Pine Haven and determining if that is a viable project, and if so, you know, get moving forward on that. So dealing with, you're right, dealing with the courthouse and the airport in Pine Haven, there's a lot of money, a lot of time and man hours put there and effort. And so, you know, we're going to have some tough decisions to make. But that's what we, you know, we ran for these positions and got elected to do.
Mm-hmm. One thing about this grant that Ken Flood filled out, this grant application, it's for the New York State grants. It's only for a small amount of the total cost of the project. The cost of doing the renovation of the sewage and water system is $13 million. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think if you got the grant, that might cover 5 to 10%. The county might be required to put in several million. Mm-hmm. And that might get you up to 30% of the total cost of the project.
Well, if... And this is where I think the elaboration of writing the grant would come in. If we were to get that money, then tie that with the FAA, possible the FAA monies that could probably be reimbursed to us, then now you're looking at a larger chunk. And that's what I'm thinking, where you say, okay, we're going to expand the airport and go in that direction and bring in more business. You can now tie in some of the reimbursements from FAA.
One thing that came out at the airport committee meeting last week was that it might not be necessary to buy land from the neighboring property, which is the Meadow Greens, which is the offer made was 600 and something thousand.
Yeah.
That's a chunk of change to be sure. And one point that Attorney Ken Dow made when he was there was that there is money for realignment of the runways. One runway is fine. The other one needs work in terms of extension of a safety zone, but they could both be realigned, and that might obviate the need for cutting down a lot of trees in private property, which would be expensive and time-consuming, and has been on the list of things to do since 2003, Sam Pratt said at the meeting. And nothing has been done. The property owners haven't even been contacted.
Again, what I think initially happened is, in talking with several people about this, I think everybody thought it was going to be an easy deal. Look, you just buy that land on the end of the runway, you know, extend the create the safety zone, and, you know, we move on with the rest of the plan. I think where all this blew up is when the owner turned down the offer, and then we realized that, wow, let's take a bigger look at this thing and see what some of these things that some of the possibilities could be. And like you just mentioned, the realignment, never thought about it, right? But now that this is looking us in the face, we need to look at all options. And so I think that would be one of the tasks of the airport committee, and I'm pretty sure as thorough as Supervisor Bassin is, they will take a hard look at that, and we will get, you know, some real recommendations from them. Some we probably will act on, and some we probably won't. But we will get questions answered and recommendations, and that's what we're looking for.
So Art Bassin's name has come up. Art Bassin is the supervisor from the town of Ankrum. And he, to a certain extent, has been like the voice of fiscal restraint on the mm-hmm. on the Board of Supervisors. Could you just talk a little bit about the work that he's been doing and what you think about it?
I think he has a strong financial background. He and several other supervisors, and so a lot of us who don't have that expertise, usually lean on them as far as looking into the budget, making sure that we're being fiscally conscious, and given that his strong financial acumen, you know, he's a very bright person, intelligent person to lean on. Now, I will say I don't want to say aggressive, but he sends out a lot of mail. He sends out
assertive,
yeah. He sends out a lot of emails, and I just think some of the supervisors are getting, you know, a little frustrated or tired of receiving two or three emails a day. Myself, I am not. You know, I pick and choose of that what I want to read through, and you have to do that with the amount of information we get on a daily basis. You try to read everything, but look, it's difficult. And so Well, all the information that Supervisor Bassin sends out, some people get frustrated and you know, they're getting tired of receiving the mails and what have you. And he's asking some of the stuff he's asking, you know, really good questions, and some of it becomes redundant. You just pick through it and take out the information that you want, and that which you don't want, toss aside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not difficult, but.
Right.
One important point about the airport is, according to Sam Pratt, it seems to be losing money, and it has been losing money since 2003 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Since 2008, according to Mr. Richmore.
Richmore is the company, the owner of Richmore, Mr. Richards.
Business has fallen since 2008 when we had the economic downturn.
Mm-hmm.
And although county literature says that it breaks even, and Art Baer, a supervisor of Hillsdale, has said that it breaks even, Sam Pratt made a very persuasive argument that it's losing money, and in these calculations they haven't included Ken Flood's time and other, you know, county employees and other things. And they've Sam Pratt has also questioned the estimate of flights per year, which is, according to people living there, 4 or 5 per day. But it's been estimated in county literature as 19,000. It's you know, where. And Sam Pratt has quoted an online FlightAware data, which says that about 1,600 flights, not including the student flights, go through there in a year. That'd be 4 or 5 flights mm-hmm. per day. So when the improvement of the runways might mean that this aviation company, Richmore, would get 2 or 3 more flights per day, Mr. Richards said that at the meeting last week. Now, it might have more impact in the long run, but another interesting question that came up about the airport is a local attorney said it wasn't put out to bid. And, you know, counties are obligated when spending the taxpayers' money to go to bid on major contracts like this one with Richmore, and it didn't go out to bid. So it sounds like the legality might be in question. Has that been discussed at the Board of Supervisors?
We haven't discussed, the contract with Richmore. But
it's a 20-year contract.
Right, I was gonna say we've been in you know, they've been had a contract with them long before I was a supervisor anyway, and I know the contract will be coming. But then you know we're getting to issues. I think we would have to take a strong look at that and to see where it is going. You had a business that had been in existence there for 20 years and in operations and have roots there, along with family having roots in this county. So I think we as a county would have to take a hard look at you know, the insinuations or the questioning of whether we would want to go out and seek another business now. Obviously, it hasn't been done right in the first place when it was done, but talking 20, 25 years ago, and I'm not making light of that. That's just, you know, the reality.
My understanding also is that the navigation system at the airport is like, you know, subpar. Let's say mm-hmm. for, I know that some time ago there was talk of UPS using that airport, but the navigation system was not adequate, or maybe it was FedEx or something. But is that being looked at as well? Like that upgrading the navigation system there? Is that part of this whole package?
I'm not totally clear on if the navigation. I know that, you know, they were looking at the landing system, the electronics landing system. I believe they already have one in place, but if not, then certainly would be looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been hearing the rumors too about FedEx and UPS and all these other DHL, you know, and I haven't been able to substantiate any of them. But you know, look, the airport, the questions that need to be asked is. And all these things that are being brought out. And let me first say that I think Sam has done a really diligent job here and has been getting information to a lot of us that we normally don't have the time to sit down and do. So I give Sam Pratt a lot of credit for that. But the airport has us all thinking, and we really need to take a hard look. Is this something that we really want in Clement County, even if we have to subsidize it to some point? Or can this be a real viable business? Would we want to privatize this and just sell it off to a private company? Because people have to understand now, if we go down that road, the likelihood of that being expanded and increasing business, nobody's going to come by that without the opportunity of wanting to
right.
make it thrive. So some of the things that people are afraid of having right now, those same people are asking to have it privatized, what could possibly get, you know, an expanded airport with more increased traffic and yeah. business and so forth. So again, I think,
I mean, that, I don't know how many people are saying to privatize it, but
well, I've heard it quite a bit, actually. Really? But what I'm saying is, the airport as it is, right now, just moving forward of how we go about what doing business there and how we go about handling the business we do there, we need to be diligent about it. Mm-hmm. That's what I think that needs to happen.
So I wanted to switch gears for a second and just talk a little bit about on the political side. So so you are the current minority leader representing the Democrats on the Board of Supervisors, and yeah. and Matt Morrell is for the supervisor from Stockport is the majority leader, and Pat Gratton is the chairman from Kinderhook. So do you see any shifts in that happening or coming down the pike? Is do you expect that the same people will be in the same positions, or do you not know?
I do believe the chairman and Matt are going to come back. I don't want to be presumptuous. I'm certainly seeking to remain as minority leader. I think we were able to make great strides working together. You know, I have agreed a lot with a lot of the stuff that the chairman has been doing this year, and working very closely with him, making sure that Democrats have been aligned with a lot of the you know, initiatives taking place, and quite frankly, in a lot of the initiatives, we have been in the forefront. So I think we have made great strides with me sitting there. I'm certainly going to sit down with my caucus and make it known that I am re-seeking that seat. I think I have support, but you know, you don't want to be too presumptuous of that. I certainly look at it and see that we have an exciting agenda moving forward if I am returned to that seat as a county. So we'll have that conversation.
So on that note, then tell us a little bit about the agenda.
Okay. So obviously, you know, you going with the budget toss of the chairman, we've going to continue working with the reentry program and actually expand it a little bit, which is going to be important. Not
so
only
tell people what the reentry program is.
Okay, the reentry program is a program that was started to deal with prisoners that are coming home from state and also the county jail and state prison that are returned back to Columbia County. This is Columbia County residents only. Those who are arrested in Columbia County coming back to Columbia County. Normally, they fall between the cracks and they end up within DSS or Columbia Opportunities, costing us thousands of dollars per month.
We're gonna as homeless people who need housing.
Homeless, sometimes drug addicted. People think when people go to prison that they're able to kick their addiction. Some people come home from prison even more addicted. Mm-hmm. Drugs are easily accessible there, and so we're going to be working with these individuals. With all the resources that we have as counties and basically trying to help them grow as people and to reintegrate them back into society and getting them off our tax rolls is the ultimate goal. And, you know, our DSS budget is almost a third of the county's budget. And if we can find creative ways to think outside the box to really help, you know, a human life and also cut the county budget, it's a real win-win. And I think the chairman gets that. I think, you know, everybody on both sides of the aisle get that, and so we're looking to expand that program. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things we're doing. There's going to be more focus on a county-city collaboration this year. Some of the things, I'll wait until the mayor and the chairman talk about them, but there's going to be more focus on that this year, and I think that has to happen. Hasn't been in the past, at least for a long, long time, but we realize that Hudson is a real gateway to the county, and I think the county knows that, and the chairman actually brought up about the fact that Amtrak traffic is up about 5-6%, and that is the fourth busiest station on the Northeast Corridor. So,
and 13th busiest in the country.
Right, and so with that being said, we know that this is a gateway. People are coming from the city and they're taking the train, or coming from wherever it is south, and they're taking the train here.
So when you say traffic, you mean Train traffic or car traffic?
Well, car traffic as well, but it appears with the train traffic being up that people, you know, more and more people are taking the train. And with that, you know, with that happening is, so where are they going to eat? Where are they staying? You know, where are they going to spend their money? They're not doing this all just in Hudson. Mm-hmm. They're coming in Hudson, but they're expanding out into the county. And I think it would be a mistake for us as a county to allow, you know, this tourist to come into Columbia County and then to go through to Columbia County and go to, for example, Rensselaer or some of the other counties without coming here and patronizing us as well.
Mm-hmm. One important need is a hotel or more hotel rooms.
I agree. Hotels, I think, you know, we really are going to have to address our parking issue at some point in time. We're really going to have to, I think, you know, more affordable restaurants. We're going to have to take another look at housing. I think if the trend continues to go the way it is, we're going to have to take a real broad look at all these issues. And I don't think Hudson has the resources to do it by itself. Mm-hmm. And I think the county realized that. They also realized that it's a benefit for the county. And so, you know, there's going to be some collaborations there. It, you know, and it's going to be one of the first times that we really had these in-depth kind of collaborations. I think it's going to be important. We're also going to be looking at civil service and the civil service test. Again, I don't want to get ahead of myself and tell some of the things that the chairman is really doing and that I'm having conversations with him with. But we're going to take a hard look at civil service and civil service test training. There's quite a bit of, there's some exciting stuff going on, really, in the county. And I think, you know, looking at Chairman Grattan, he's really thinking outside the box as far as trying to save taxpayers' money and also, you know, driving some of these issues and you know, really being amenable to some of the ideas that, mm-hmm. regardless of what your party affiliation is, of when you bring them up.
We've had you on the show before with Chairman Grattan. Maybe after the new year we could plan one of those again. That would be great.
And that would be
talk
good.
A little bit about
yeah. I don't want to disclose. I don't want to disclose a lot of stuff that he wants to mention in his mm-hmm. opening speech.
Sure. So. One of the other big issues is the power lines, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that.
I definitely have some thoughts about that. You know, I understand that this is an initiative, you know, by the governor and our state legislature. What they have to understand or have to take a harder look at, it's almost kind of like us, right, with the airport. You hear a lot of people crying out, and rightfully so. Some of the things that could come with the benefits that could come with this power line is great for New York State. But some of the negative things that could come along with it is, you know, really problematic. And we have to take a hard, hard look at that. You know, the taking of people's homes, you know, messing
ruining
up
of the
landscape.
Yeah.
You know, all these kinds of things is really disturbing. And from what I'm hearing is, you know, one solution is to really put the power lines underground. And I brought this up to, you know, a few people, and they said, well, we have to look at the expense of it. And I'm saying, look, if you're going to eminent domain my home, you know, I'm just worried about my particular property. Mm-hmm. And this is how homeowners and landowners are going to look at it.
Well, right. That represents a huge loss of capital by a large group of people.
Well, so now our state legislature and our state representatives will have to look at that, and they will then have the same thing we're doing with the airport. They will have to weigh out some of these tough decisions. When we say it's you know, disturbing a large group of people or property owners, what's the benefit on the back end? They have to weigh out these decisions. What I say is I hope they get it right, because you know, when you're talking about people's lands and livelihoods, you need to really, really be careful. I'm not a fan of eminent domain of any sort unless it's absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. And so
it's also expensive. Didn't the county budget $25,000 for this one particular eminent domain process involving Meadow Greens?
Right. And I don't know what the state has or if the power companies are going to be responsible for eminent domain. I don't know who's going to be handling that, because it is a state project. But, boy, it's right now, the path that they're going down, they need many, many more questions answered versus what's being asked right now.
One thing point Ken Dow made at the airport meeting, which applies to a lot of the capital projects that the county and municipalities are contemplating, is that in the beginning, when a project is being contemplated, the costs are often lowballed by whoever is promoting it to the lawmakers. And then they find out, whoops, it's going to cost twice or three times as much. And once you've paid out several million dollars, you're stuck. You know, you've got to keep paying. Otherwise, you're just losing the money you've already put in. So it's kind of a sucker game in a way.
Well, I would say that is true in some respects. And one of the things that makes that hard is, look, let's go back to some of the state laws that are put in place. We have WICS laws and we have, you know, prevailing wages. And look, I'm a strong proponent of those things, but they do escalate costs on projects. And so it's hard for municipalities and government projects to get a hard line on what it is going to cost. You can go out and you can cost estimate on material. You can't cost estimate on labor. It may cost you X. It may cost you Y based on if it's going to be overtime or if do I have to get a union worker to do this. So it's hard to build in those costs. But when you look at the courthouse project, for example, we're going to come in right around even or a little bit below what the cost estimate was for that project. So that you look at that and you can say we had a successful build there.
That's good. That's kind of reassuring.
I believe it when I see it, Bill.
It's going to come in under.
Yeah?
Yeah, it is.
That's cool.
One thing Art Basson said about in regard to the $8 to $13 million that's being contemplated being spent on airport improvements, and that's county money. The Board of Supervisors Chair, Chairman Grattan, said that the expenditures are reimbursed by 90% mm-hmm. of federal and state government funds. But that doesn't change things for Basson. He was quoted in the Register Star article by Nathan Maber this year saying, we have to be just as careful. That's our money. It's just coming from a different pocket.
Well, that's always the case, right? And I've always had this myself, always had these thoughts about grants. Like, if we go out and we seek a $1 million grant, and yes, it's coming out of our tax, our taxpayers' pockets. It's a $1 million grant. That program, though, was initiated to do a specific purpose. And if we don't seek the grant, some other community nationwide will seek the grant, and we still will pay out the money. So my thought on that is, it'd be better for it to come back to this particular community for our particular projects versus going, you know, wherever else in New York State or throughout the country. Mm-hmm. Once the government has decided to initiate a particular program and they're gonna dedicate funds to it, then it would be smart for us to actually seek those funds as long as we had a real viable project that was going to benefit the taxpayers of this county.
So in today's Register Star, there's a story about Judge Mott, Supreme Court Justice Mott, throwing out the FOIL request lawsuit that again, about the airport. And I was wondering less about the specific case than whether you believe that the county does a good job at responding to FOIL requests. And for those who don't know, FOIL means a freedom of information law, so which allows citizens to get virtually any document from the government, except for like personnel records and real estate transactions, I believe. But do you think that the county does a good job? Could we do better as far as responding to FOIL requests?
I think FOILs is always a challenge, right? It's from my view, we can't work hard enough to make sure that information is for public preview. So I think that, you know, most if not all of the decisions we make should be available to public to view. With that being said, it's always difficult because of the amount of man hours we have to put into gathering some of this information, especially if we're going back more than 5 years, just just from the sheer time that it would take to do that. Mm-hmm. With that being said, though, if I had to say right now, I would say we're doing, if we were grading ourselves, we probably are about a C. We could definitely be much better about how we gather foils, how we answer foils, the timeliness of the foils. And I think, that, again, that would have to be a discussion. I think all governments have this problem, but speaking specifically for us.
It's particularly troublesome and or difficult in this county because it's so little of the records are digitized. That's one of the big problems.
And we've slowly been moving in that direction, but slowly. But the FOIA request, I think we're going to have, you know, that's one of the issues we're going to have to take a look at as supervisors is how do we address that without it costing us much more money? Again, we have to be financially prudent about where we put our resources. I would certainly much rather put my resources in reentry versus seeking FOIA requests. But
the solution to that, according to Robert Freeman, who runs the State Committee on Open Government, is just to have all these documents online so anyone can search them.
Well, that's
and that would certainly take away the cost and the labor, but it's a long time, considering.
That's easily said.
It's easier said.
Just take, for example, not even dealing with the airport issue. When we had that whole investigation of DSS and we brought that commissioner down here and he was reviewing cases, they were pulling files going 15, 20 years. There was nothing digitized. We had to spend thousands and thousands of man hours for them to carry all those files into the courthouse, the individual files, and then thousands of man hours to have them bring them back and put them back in their place. Now we will have to spend that same kind of money to have someone digitize them. So there's going to be an upfront cost.
Well, except then it's only one shot.
There's going to be a one-shot cost, but how much is that one shot, and what is it going to do to our overall budget?
Right.
There are grants for digitizing.
Yeah.
We have seen some of the grants, and some of them we haven't been quick enough on responding, and others we have. I don't think it will definitely won't cover the expense of what it would take for us to do. But look, I'm not making any excuses. We as a county need to be moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm. What other things on the horizon do you see? Is there anything else coming up that you at least want people to be aware of?
I think right now there's going to be a real concerted effort after getting done with the courthouse to really look at Pine Haven. I think for me right now, I think Pine Haven is a project that a lot of us are really leaning towards. But I think the question is going to be asked. We're going to ask the question of the taxpayers. Is this a project that the county want to continue to subsidize? The taxpayers in Columbia County want to continue to subsidize? So we can have a nursing home in Columbia County where the residents of Columbia County would have a shorter drive. I don't think, at least I don't see in the foreseeable future that this will be a total break-even project for Columbia County. We will have to subsidize it at some level.
Mm-hmm.
What that level is hasn't been determined, but I think at least in the foreseeable, we will have to subsidize that. And we will have to bring that to the taxpayers and say, even if we build a new nursing home and make it more lavish and more appealing to the residents and that type of thing, which is what we're seeking to do, we will have to subsidize it to some level,
it started with the planning and the hiring of an architectural firm or engineering firm, hasn't it?
It did. I mean, we're long in the process, and that's because we're realizing though this current home that we have has so many issues that if we continue to, we're putting as much money into the building as we're putting into the residents. So with that happening, the decision is going to have to be made very soon. If we decide that we're not going to go with a new nursing home, that, you know, we may have to look at just getting out of the business altogether, like letting a private firm come in here and handle it. Or we are going to be in the nursing home business, and so then we need to make the hard line decision. Are we going to build a new nursing home with the reimbursements we can get back from the state and subsidize it to some level? You know, again, but that's a taxpayer decision.
A few years ago, you may remember, there was a discussion about whether or not to tear down Bliss Towers.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like there might be parallels between the two projects.
Yeah, a little. Only on the factors that people could be displaced. That's the only parallel I see, is that people could be displaced. Because when you're dealing with Pine Haven, they will have somewhere to go. And Bliss Towers, you take that down right now without a plan in place, there's nowhere for those people to go. So with Pine Haven, they will go somewhere. It would just be much further away. And for the people in Columbia County, if you want to go, you know, right now you can, you know, drive within 6-7 miles at the furthest point, and you can come see your resident, your family member who's staying there. Versus if they were up in Albany or over in Berkshire or somewhere like that, where you would have to drive for a couple hours. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that we have to, you know, determine in Columbia County. I think right now, I think the taxpayers of Columbia County, as long as we can, you know, keep the costs down to right about where they are now, would support us having a new nursing home. I really do believe that. We're certainly compassionate. We're an older county, so we empathize with, you know, those who actually end up in the nursing home. And I think our workers out there do a great job is taking care of the residents. So we, you know, they have one of the better reputations of all the nursing homes around. So you certainly would hate to lose that.
Aren't we the oldest or the second oldest county in the state?
At least that's what I've been told.
In terms of age demographics?
Yeah, that's what I've been told.
Some time ago, there was talk and presentations about the concept of a county manager. Is that something that you still would like to see happen?
It comes up from time to time, and I would like to see us take a slow approach to that. I want to make sure that we have all our county agencies operating at the optimum level, and then for us to go back and look at realignment of, you know, some of our county department heads and things of that nature.
Well, some would say that they'll never operate at an optimal level unless you have a county manager.
I don't believe that's true. And we have to look at it. If you look at in the past, say 20 years ago, when we were hiring department heads, some of them would have the college education behind them with no experience. Someone will have the experience without the college education. One of the things that was clear, though, is there was a lot of patronage going on. Mm-hmm. And so we were ending up with department heads who were friends of cousins and brothers and these kinds of things. And departments weren't run professionally. Today and age, you cannot do that within government. And regardless of what your party affiliation is, we're all realizing that you need to have smart, competent people at the lead of these agencies. And some time ago, I think we started really about 5 years ago. I would say even that dealing with Chairman Bear when he came in and carried on by Brown and now carried on by Chairman Grattan, is that we need to make sure that at the management level, not just the department head, but even their assistants, have to be professionals. And you know, we make sure that as supervisors, we interview people and we seek smart professionals who can get these jobs done. And then we now putting things in place to hold them accountable. So you're not going to get away with bringing in your cousin or your brother or whoever it is if they're not qualified. You're just not going to get away with it with today's days and times.
Do you think that there's truly equal opportunity in county government, though?
No, let me not go that far. I still think that there's still some party patronage going on. And look, I'm not going to argue political party patronage. I'm not going to argue against that because that goes both ways, right? If you know, the Democrats were in control, we would bring in the people who, you know, we align ourselves with. At least that's what I believe. Well, with that being said, though, I do think that we're much more open than we have been at any point in time that I've been dealing with county government.
Yeah.
A few years ago, there was talk about switching, a proposal to switch to a legislative model of government. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered what happened to that. Did that have any, oomph to it?
I don't favor it. I'll say this. And some of the reasons I've talked to many of the towns that have legislators. A legislature.
Like in Greene County, where they have a legislator?
They have that, but they have a county manager. But the ones I really shy away from is when we get the the county executive. And because now you're getting into giving this individual, you want to get away from giving one individual too much power or where you really start putting, it makes it more difficult as a supervisor or a legislator for me to put forth the will of the people I represent.
I don't know. And, I mean, I grew up on Long Island where I think that a county executive and a county legislature works really good.
We don't want to talk about
really
Thomas
good.
Walsey, do we?
Well, I mean, I'm from Suffolk County.
Okay.
Other question is, can this county afford it? You'd be looking at a real salary for someone who performed that service.
Well, I mean, obviously, you bring in an executive, then you're going to start realigning the departments, and you're going to be looking at consolidation. I don't think we can afford to add another $100,000 to $150,000 salary on top of what we already have. So you would have to look at a total realignment of county government for sure.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's it for us. Any quick last word?
I'd just like to, we're coming into the holiday season, so I'd like to say happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everybody, and be safe.
And so this is going to be our last show for the year, but I think we're back on New Year's Day. I think, right? New Year's Day is the first. So
good luck with
we'll
that
see.
One.
We may pre-record that one. We'll see. But I'm so happy to have Deborah Gilbert here as co-host and so welcome aboard.
Thank you. And happy to be here.
Any last words?
It's, another dynamic show. This is great fun.
So this has been At Issue. I'm Victor Mendolia. We'll be back in 2 weeks on New Year's Day. And have a great holiday, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
We'll talk to you soon.